Oh, and there it goes, everyone. I'll check that out. New intro. Lots of newness here. Welcome, everyone, to Wayward Planet. My name is BC Wayman, and this is our first attempt, our solo run, our maiden voyage as rich entrepreneurs are hurtling through the very smallest parts of space. Like, they're barely getting into space. They're basically a little bit above, like, a plane at full altitude. But we're calling it space travel. So as these billionaires, Bezos and Musk and Branson, fight to go to space, we're fighting just to see what it's like to have a live YouTube broadcast. Something they've been doing for many, many years. Not new to them, but new to us here on Wayward Planet. Very excited. Thank you for joining us. As I mentioned, we're going to be doing our Wayward Planets. We're back. We'll talk about that today, but we are back. We're going to be doing them all live first. You can check us out every time. We'll do a better job of advertising social media wise and such. We'll do these live on our YouTube channel for Wayward Media, on our Twitter page at Meet WM, M-E-E-T-W-M, and our Facebook page at Meet WM, M-E-E-T, WM. Meeting Wayward Media. That's what we're trying to do. And I'm here today with one of, I guess, the co-founder of a lot of things, including Wayward Media, Inhalable Smoke Shop in Brunswick, Ohio, and all sorts of other crypto craziness that he has going on in his life. So we'll get to our guest in just a minute, but welcome. Thank you for joining us today. I'm hoping. Yeah, thank you for the applause there. Dustin's applauding. If you're watching us on video, you can see it. If you're listening to this online, whether it's on iTunes, on Google Play, et cetera, thank you for checking us out. Be sure to give us a follow. Check us out on YouTube. Smash that subscribe button, as the cool kids say. It's weird to start again, right? When you do something and you put your hard work, your effort, your time, your energy into it, and you give it your all, and then it just kind of fizzles out, right? It's a firework. It's like Katy Perry is just screaming in your ear, right? Just, right? It's just going, and you're bursting, and you're accelerating like that rocket, right? It's a good themology here that we have on Wayward Planet. I don't think themology is a real word, but I'm going to say it anyway because I have a microphone. You feel exciting as that firework is, like, right? And it goes and it explodes. And when it explodes, that moment makes the trip worth it. And so imagine exploding for about 8 months. So a lot of double entendres into there, but imagine exploding for about 8 months and feeling good and then great. And then just eventually, right? Just like the firework just kind of turns to ash. It just falls to the ground and you forget all about it. I fear that's what was about to happen to your favorite podcast. But sometimes you have to resurrect. But there is where I wanted to get to. I had a long way to get to my initial point, which is re-motivation, right? Everyone gets motivated to do something. But when you had that thing and you did that thing and then that thing fizzles out like your fireworks, it's hard to re-motivate. It's both takes a big serving of humble pie to admit that you did something and that you weren't able to complete it. It takes finding maybe new ways. Maybe you weren't happy with how it was heading and the progress that it was making, and you felt like it was capable of more. So it lay dormant for a while, and then like a phoenix from the ashes, it arises live on YouTube with a million other video podcasts. Who knows? Who knows? Dustin, I know, by the way, welcome, Dustin Cava, co-founder of Inhalable Smoke Shop in Brunswick, Ohio, co-founder of Wayward Media, co-founder of some other stuff I'm sure you're going to tell us about in a little bit. When you have something that you've done, something minor, something major, maybe you have a specific example in your head as I'm rambling on here, that you've kind of hit the pause button on, right? Just the pause. Is it difficult to pick it back up from the ashes, or does it excite you? What's it like when you see that Project A laying there under a bunch of burnt firework ashes and you dust them off, blow them away and say, do you get inspired, or does it put a feeling of dread in the belly of yours?
It really depends on how long I've put my energy into
fair
it.
Fair enough. That's fair enough.
There are times when you got to recognize that it's just not the right time for it. Maybe you're 3 years too early. Maybe you're 3 years too late. Maybe you're waiting for one more door to open that really allows it to go into fruition without any friction. I have learned that when my intuition says it's time to go, there is a reason, but I've also learned that I've learned what it's like to be too early, or, you know, first to market can be very, very lonely. And it's just to be out in the ocean alone is sometimes worse than being in the ocean at the right time, but being by yourself, you know, So there are times that when you set that object down, or you set that project down for a year, 2 years, sometimes it could even be five. But when you get that gut feeling again, that internal desperation that I have to move forward with this thing, then there's another amp. Everything that you ever put into it gets amplified exponentially. And so I found that you have just refueled the rocket and you are getting ready to blast off. And that sometimes it does take setting it down to feel and remind yourself why you were so passionate about to begin with.
It does a little bit. I'll tell you, and obviously these are terrible metaphors for the podcast itself. You know, I started it. It started about almost a year ago, actually. We got through 70 episodes out there, and it started as one thing, right? One reason. And then, like many of other items that have ended in failure or just lack of completion, turned into a lot of just, you know, excuses. And then they pile up and you justify it. You all have valid reasons in your head, right? You're like, yeah, that's why. But then, and here's where I struggle. When it goes away, I have pride. I don't like to think this to say that word, but I must be prideful. I get embarrassed, like, oh, I did it. And then I failed, not failed, but it just went away. So it's one thing if it goes away, but to bring it back feels like you have to explain and you have to tell people and they're going to ask questions. And you're like, why did you leave in the first place? And this and that. And it becomes really tough. But then you start having these, and I'm already kind of fired up and getting excited to talk to you. And we're just still like in the talking about what's happened with the podcast phase, let alone everything else. Or the one we did the other day, the monthly marketing voyage, also available on Wayward Media with Anthony Trav on there as well. So just having those conversations gets exciting. I like what you said to end it with, like the passion that you just had for it. And it gets me fired up. And I remember having it, and I'm already, you know, trying to send out emails, get new guest book. I love the idea, though we have no listeners now currently watching us live. I do believe at some point, if I had told someone it was going to happen, this was a test run, everyone. This is a test run. I wasn't sure. Dustin and I probably spent, if we're breaking the fourth wall, a good like 40 minutes later than we planned to go live, because we're adjusting logos and we're playing with setups. We're still taking notes for overlays and things like that in the intro video. Great job on the intro video, Anthony Trav. Thank you very much for that, Trav Marketing Group. It's just, I get nervous about bringing it back up, and not even so much nervous. I just don't want to deal with it. And that's a bad way of dealing with things sometimes, but I fucking missed it. Like, that's just the truth. I just fucking missed it. I missed kind of doing it. And then when you add in the live part, which makes it a go. Right? It's harder to cancel live. It's harder to make excuses for live. And when you're live, you just go. Whatever happens, happens. Whatever you say, you say. Whatever I'm talking into the microphone or saying into the camera, that's out there. It never goes away now. It's on someone's feed. Even if no one's listening today, it's on the internet forever. And so I enjoy that part of it. So I'm hoping. I'm hopeful. I think, and as you talked about, sometimes you need a group of people, and it did feel, and I had a great audio guy helping me for a bit, and these things, and it just kind of all went away for a bit for a variety of reasons. And then it felt like a lot of treading water, and then you weren't getting a lot of love for it, or the effort wasn't getting a payoff. So it became tough, and I'll stop complaining about what happened before. But I think you, Anthony, coming in, getting together, forming kind of Wayward Media and having other aspects of it, I'm very excited. Check us out, wayward.media. Still new, still fresh, if you're listening to this when it's being recorded, which is October 14th of 2021. You know, who knows? Maybe this goes in the vault of infamy, Dustin. Maybe 6 years from now, this conversation is like two people being like, I wonder what it'd be like to listen to Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci have a conversation. I did just go there, by the way. I did just make that comparison to our wandering conversation about my middling podcast to two of the greatest fucking Renaissance painters known to man. That's what I think is going to happen in years from now. But I appreciate you guys coming aboard. We'll quit filleting each other here soon, but I appreciate you coming aboard, helping me out with this stuff, right? I like to talk, and I hate the branding. I hate logos. I hate those things. But the website, Dustin, designed by Dustin Cava, looks amazing. What we have coming forward, I think, is going to be exciting. And so I think this is our tip, right? Just the tip is we're giving you. So thank you for that. I'm excited that you're joining us. We'll finish up our words on the podcast here and then dig into it. Anything to offer?
Oh, yeah, you know what? I don't want anybody to be scared of failure. You know, that feeling of putting the project down and having to look at it every day. It's in your corner of their office every day, or you're scrolling through your folders on your folder and you see that project and it has the ability to ding you, give you a little bit of reaction every time that you come across it if you don't change the way you think about that project. And sometimes, you know, it may never, ever have meant to go out. And what you learned in the process of creating it is really the point of making it in the first place. Or, you know, the skill sets that you had learned, or just the direction that it led you to, is really what it was about. And so I want people to change the way they feel when they look at that project later. I want them to look at it like an opportunity or another form of growth or just something positive, instead of constantly feeling like they're a failure, because it wasn't. You actually still did it. You went out there, you put in the work, you started the process. And even if you hit a wall, at least you found that wall. You got it in the car and you started moving. And
I drove that fucking car. Like, I crashed horribly, but I drove the car.
That's right. And I think you need that ability to constantly be able to crash that car and be comfortable with it and be comfortable with that head-on collision to get to where you really want to go. It's the same thing. Like, if you were a trader and you lost all you made millions and millions of dollars young, but you lost it all. You know, you didn't learn. Sometimes it takes losing it all to learn how to keep it the next time. Sometimes it takes hitting that brick wall to know how to steer around it next time. And there is always something to benefit from putting that project down still. And just enter fearless, change that perception a little bit.
There's your daily dose of positivity, everyone, from Dustin Cava's mouth. All right, so let's go there. A little bit about what you just talked about. So I know you're in the cryptocurrency. I want to hear about Boro and everything in a minute, because I'm not really exactly sure what it is. But I wanted to start with what you talked about, young people right now. There is a movement, by the way, Dustin Cava. I don't know if you hang out in the bowels of Reddit or these places. I don't know if you know what an ape is or a stonk or these other words. I know you might. I feel like you might be down.
You know, I'm Diamond Hands.
Yeah, I know. I feel like, yeah, Diamond Hands. I feel like you're right in there. I have quite confidence with that. So, when you think of the stock market, and my entire life has been, I think of it as people much older than me, even though I'm approaching 50 years old, I've always pictured the stock market as something old people did. It literally exchanged papers, right? Like, it's somewhere, right? Just these videos or images in your brain of Wall Street in the movies, like where they're all just on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange and they're screaming papers and they're yelling in the people's faces. Or people watching like a ticker go by. But I always pictured it to be this paper transaction that 90-year-olds did. And it been for a while. And then I think, you know, obviously the invention of the smartphone and the ability to do things faster, though much like gambling, stocks was not easily traded early on. Gambling was harder to do on your phone early days. It's pretty easy now. Heck, they even made apps now to bet on NFL games live during the game. That's the new thing this year. So this movement over the last year kind of started with GameStop, started on a Reddit social media driven thing to take a stock and move it up. And now there are young people 12, 13, 14 years old. You have apps like Robinhood and things where they are trading stocks. I dabbled very little. I bought literally 10 stocks of AMC when it was super cheap. I sold it. I made like, I don't know if I made like $400. I was like, good enough for me. I don't even know what it is now. It felt, following stocks for me is feels like a lot of anxiety. I'm constantly checking it. I'm always afraid I'm going to not sell it enough, oversell it. So I don't think I would have been equipped when I was young. What do you think of the young people getting into stocks? You're a little younger than I am, but what was your like experience growing up with stocks? Is that something you understood? I know you're into cryptocurrency now. What do you think about kids? We'll say their kids are 15, 16, even younger, putting real money or life savings into stocks like AMC or a dog, right? Dogecoin. I mean, that's, what do you, where are you at with that?
Obviously we're going to start off this by saying this is not financial advice.
Yeah, this is clearly not financial. Did you just hear what I said? I have zero clue. You could see my bank account. You would know financial advice. I'm just curious because the truth is a weird thing.
Kids these days are recognizing, not only have kids these days been taught in school, when you were in school, all they taught you was about the Great Depression. As my son is entering into school, you know, to fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade and on, they're going to be talking about the stock market crashes that were since then. And I think kids today are starting to recognize that the system has been rigged against them. They have more education and more ability to gain access to that education quicker than they ever have before, certainly than since, say, you were young. And so the access to constant forms of information that talks about money management is actually happening outside the house or outside the school, as opposed to what's happening inside. And I also think that, again, these children are recognizing the system has been rigged against them, that when you put $25,000 into a bank account when your child is born today, by the time he goes to school when he's 18, 19 years old, that $20,000 with cost of living increases, inflation, cost of school increases, are consistently bringing that down to say $3,000 to $5,000. And it's only now that the access to that information is out there in droves. And so these children aren't dumb, and they are recognizing that should they just play the game that the bank wants them to play, or play the game that they've been told for long, long periods of time, that they're not going to have very much. And these children understand that if they are going to work, which none of them want to do to begin with, but should they, if they are working, they sure shit want that money to be theirs, and they want better opportunities with it. And, you know, when you talk about the stock market, you know, they are seeing the games that are played in that space. They are seeing how rigged the system is against them, especially when they're playing these meme stocks like GameStop and AMC and stuff like that. They're seeing, but they're also starting to recognize the power of the individual. And they're starting to recognize that it's not just going to be the hedge funds that rule the world, or it's not just going to be these large institutions. There's going to be, with technology and with things that are changing, way more access to newer opportunities. And, you know, then you bring up the crypto space, and it's saying, like, you know, if there ever was a new opportunity, these children are recognizing that crypto is, it's a new protocol that is revolutionary. And with adoption rates higher than the internet, why wouldn't they attach their financial institutions to that protocol or to that technology? Again, if the internet took 25 years to get to where it is now, to get the adoption rate at 3 billion people out of 7 billion people, or 5 billion people in the world have access to the internet, as opposed to the 1 billion 10 years ago, crypto adoption is 20 to 30% higher. And so, you know, when you talk about the internet adoption and what that made and what that did for society, crypto's moving faster than the internet did. At 15 years, at 13-year mark, there is a higher adoption rate of this protocol. And thus, we're recognizing it. These kids aren't blind to it. They are on every trend. They hear every message board. They're playing games with their friends, and every single one of those spaces is affected by crypto.
Do you worry that they're only seeing a portion of the picture, though? Right? I mean, because when they do the stocks, like, they can see what's there, they can see what's in their wallet, but there's other parts of it too, right? I mean, do you worry that it's only they see part of it and just play what's popular, or is it just? Am I just sounding like an old
person? At first, no. I mean, what's happening is the younger kids are playing a higher risk play. So should those 16-year-olds have went to their parents would have diversified that money into a bunch of different things. It would have been a much more long-term play. What kids, the problem with kids today is they see quick money they see quick money as the answer and not the part of the journey. Yes, you will make quick money, you know? Yes, you can make quick money, but you lose quickly as well. And I like the idea of them losing a little bit when they're 16, 17, 18, and having, like I said, when we first started talking on this stream, having that experience to recognize that, you know, trading in the market, you better have a grasp on your emotions too. You know, like how much of your trades, how much of your daily investment is brought upon by emotion? You have the fear of missing out, the fear of losing it all, getting out too early. You know, it's emotion. Entering into anything in life without a plan is generally going to burn up. And so, you know, I love this idea of the ones that make it in the trading space, the ones that make it in any space, are the ones who had a plan to begin with, who didn't just shoot a shot in the dark and just, you know, there really was something that they were trying to gain traction with. And recognizing when you hit those milestones and stepping back when you do and reassessing the situation, it applies to fucking your investments, and it applies to any business that you make, and it applies to building and designing a podcast or a podcast network. Having that ability to recognize what you want the end goal to be really, really sets the tone for a lot of actions in the future. And some days when you just don't know how to feel, or you just can't grasps things emotionally, going back to that piece of paper that dials it in a bit helps keep you at the floor, helps keep you grounded.
It's interesting. It's going to be, I mean, there are so many people, and I say kids, but kids is really just an analog for, that's not even the right word. I'm making up languages here. Kids is just a something in the English language for anyone that's kind of adopted a new technology, and it tends to skew younger. I mean, but there are literal children, right, under 10-year-old children making their living, making their parents' living and their generational living doing this, right, talking on media. More so, you know, all these kids that do those home videos, those families that do their vlogging stuff. You have people who obviously make a living, a great living, playing video games. And I don't even just mean the rare Dr. Disrespect or PewDiePie's, like those are anomalies, like a Matt Damon, right? There's tons of people who just are character actors. There's tons of people who make 80,000, 100,000, you know, a small, which is not as a lot of money, but compared to a, you know, a mega streamer guy, a ninja kind of guy. You don't need to be that. You just need to hop on at a regular basis, create the content. There are a ton of people who talk to people for a living. There are kids now and younger people who are betting money on meme stocks and stuff like real, at least AMC and GMC or GameStop are real stocks, Dogecoin and other things, people playing with cryptocurrency. And when it comes to, you know, and I think about this a lot, when we talk about businesses and working and the lack of jobs, I don't know if it's always the pay rate. I think there's a lot of ways for young people, kids today, to make money that don't mean going to be working at, going to work at McDonald's and getting screamed at by some angry woman because your pickles are hot. Like, right. These type of things that happen all the time. You can probably, with a phone, like you look at TikTok as a whole. I mean, obviously, what's that one girl, that Charli D'Amelio, whatever, the really famous one, who's now TikTok and got her own like show, her own reality show. Tons of people just making short little cute videos, or Patreon, right? Just doing stuff and having people create for them. It's not that there's not great jobs or the pay. I think it's just there's a lot of better ways to work, right? You talk a lot about passion. You're very motivational about trying to not only do what you love, but find a way to make it work. I think as we go forward, you know, a lot of things are going to be like that, right? People just finding ways to make their own money, whether it is playing a stock, whether it is getting involved in cryptocurrency or making content or, you know, just producing stuff. So I don't know. I don't know if that affected it, if you think that does affect some of what's happening out there in the world today with the job wise, but I think there's just a lot of better ways. Like there are kids, 15-year-olds, who can make retirement level money on a cryptocurrency today or a Twitch stream. That blows my mind. Blows my mind. So why the fuck would you want to go work at Subway? Like, why would you want to?
And what's the argument? And even going to higher education, I mean, like, you know, I that kid who's making that money early on, guess what he's also learning? He's learning every business administration test that you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, like he is running it like a business. And so if you can imagine what the power of that type of attitude being, you know, really what it boils down to is they are recognizing that they have to take charge over their future. They have to. It is no longer going to be an institution that protects them. It's no longer going to be that job at that 10-year place that protects them for the next 30 years that they can count on. They've watched every one of their friends, parents, and, you know, businesses and careers and stuff over the past change and everything that they thought was a solid foundation be disrupted in the last 15, 20 years as they were growing up. And so more and more, they are recognizing that no, work doesn't have to look the same. Pay doesn't have to come in the same form. And I can be in my underwear and still do a good job. And there's value to that. There's value of saying my time is getting less and less. And so I want my work time to happen at the beach. I want the ability to have more freedom in how my other time gets allotted. And they are recognizing the freedom of controlling your own destiny in that way. And the freedom of what the internet in general provides. I don't have to show up to a specific spot anymore to make the money. I can do it from home.
It's not even doing it from home. I think it's more about doing it on your own terms, right? Because it doesn't have to be from home. You can go to a park or do wherever, whatever. Yeah, whatever you need to do. It can be a job that is out working in gardens and hard physical labor because that's the type of stuff you enjoy. I became, and some of this you know because I've talked to you. I don't know if I actually talked about this a lot in air. You know, I became disillusioned. This whole thing started, this whole creative journey that I've tried to take over the last, it's been about 6 years now, because of like a job. Like I worked, you know, in retail management. I worked in retail, and then I worked in retail management for a long time. Then I worked in nonprofit fundraising, which I enjoyed, but I felt like I left nonprofit fundraising because I felt there was like this salary cap on me and I wasn't going to be able to make enough money and I wanted to make more money and do these things. And I was had met who's my wife now, and you know, we're having some babies and we need some money. So I went back into the private sector and worked for essentially like a marketing company. And I was there for 2 years. And prior to getting laid off, spoiler alert, I had every intention, like 6 months before this happened, I had this long conversation with my wife about, I am retiring here. Like I literally, and so this would have been because I worked another job. So we're talking 12 years ago. I'm probably in my mid 30s. I assumed in my mid 30s, 33, 34, that I was at the job that I would work for the next 30 plus years. I had every intention of working there till I was in my 60s and retiring. I loved what I did. I felt like they loved me. I didn't love what I do. I feel like that'd be rephrased that. I was good at what I did. There's a difference there. I felt like I was very good at the job. Caused a lot of stress. It was some hard hours during the holiday season. We were a merch company, like a marketing merch company for retail chains, and I was in project management. It was a great gig. I got paid well. I really enjoyed it. I had to be somewhere at a certain time and in a certain dress, but I was down with that lifestyle. I got it. I worked it. I was a corporate I dug it. I didn't like suit and tie corporate, but I dug business casual corporate. It was my jam and my bread and my butter. And so the downsizing happens. A lot of retail chains started closing, places like Circuit City and things like that, CompUSA. So they had lost some money. Layoffs were happening. I had no intention of being laid off. As a matter of fact, the week before I got laid off, literally the 5 days before it, I was responsible for choosing people to get laid off. I had to lay off people who are still my friends to this day. It was a terrible thing to do, but I'll tell you, and this sounds terrible to say it 12 years later, I lost zero sleep because I was like, oh, too bad for you, man. Sucks to be you. Should have did a better job. I got mine. I didn't say that in my brain, but I didn't. Subconsciously, that's clearly what I felt. Like in retrospect, looking in the mirror, I was not, like I felt bad, but also I was like, yeah, well, I'm obviously the one laying people off, so sucks to be you, right? And then on the very last day of layoffs, I was the only person to be let go. The very last day of the month. So not on top of that, it was right after my twins were born and they were in the hospital with near death stuff. You know, I don't need to get into that, but it was a whole thing. It was the end of the month, the very last day. It was the 31st at 3 o'clock. So my insurance ran out in 2 hours. Twins in the hospital. And I bawled. I just cried. I got my car. I was shocked. I was dumbfounded upon. I was so dumbfounded to be let go. Like, had never even crossed my mind. And it really, that drive home, I was so sad. I called my wife. She was super supportive. Like, that was when I knew she was a keeper. Like, she was like, all right, come on home. Actually, I think she said, why don't you go out, come home in like 2 hours, chill out for a bit. And I just sat in my car. Like, I literally was bald. I was like, what happened? It was more this emotional, not like I missed my job, because once again, I didn't love it. I was shocked and betrayed and hurt. And it took me a while to get working again. And the only reason I went back and I wouldn't know what to do is I went to work another job because someone who also was laid off had got a new job, thought about me, was like, hey, you'll be perfect for it. I did that for 6 years. And then that company sold to a bigger chain. And they said, well, it was a retail chain. I worked in their marketing. They said, well, you know, the staff stays because they just get new t-shirts. We got corporate people. We got marketing people. You can move to Chicago for less money than you're making now. And I was like, and I was just disillusioned. And that started down this path. Like, that's that thing. But really, and then it started from there and trying to take advantage and whatnot. It was disillusionment in corporate structure. It took me to be, and I know I've talked for a while about it, to be like 35 to get it. But I think you nailed it on the head. My son and my kids, you talked about the last 15 years, people watching their parents go through that. I am like putting these puzzle pieces together like, shit. Yeah. So why would the future generations? A lot of people went through what I went through in 08, 09. A lot of layoffs happened. And I do think, as you said earlier, it may be talked about as a change of work culture. Combine that with COVID, right? So yes, two separate exactly. entities. But COVID probably gave the final, like, if it was like COVID is like Vin Diesel who hit the NOS button, right? Like in the car, like the car's moving along. It's going along. We're seeing disillusionment. Work is fading away. People are getting fucked the system. Life is weird. We have political unrest. We have racial unrest, like things. And then COVID came and it was just like, you know, quarter mile at a time, NOS button hit and just disillusionment of disenfranchisement of work happened, right? It just happened. And now we're where we're at, which is scary. But God, it feels so fucking fun. It feels so exciting. I'm like, let's make it until you start a podcast and then fail and then restart again.
Man, that's okay. You could spend, trust me, it could be a lot worse.
I know we can't. You go through it. Well, let's talk. I know. So you are like, you know, we've talked a lot. You've been on the show before. If you listen to Wayward Planet, followed us on Wayward Planet on Twitter and such, or check out the new website, wayward.media. On YouTube as well. You know, there's several shows with Dustin where we talk about what he's done. Co-founder of Inhalables, you know, a great smoke shop, working on that. Not even a smoke shop, artistic. The advertisement you recently gave me for something we did together was so, if you had not had a picture of the glass item, you would never even know. You would think it was an art studio. The way you described it and branded it and worded it without that one picture, you're like, what is this place? Side note, I ran into a few other people who thought it was a Mexican restaurant in Hobles. They're like, is it a Mexican restaurant? I'm like, no, it's not in Hobles. I'm like, first of all, I think that's super racist. It's not in Hobles. They're like, oh, as soon as you tell them, they get it.
They used to say it was a Middle Eastern convenience store.
Yes, you know, it has that vibe to it. Nhalabs, like it's missing something. As soon as you get it, you're like, oh, like one of those 3D like paintings of the sailboat or whatever. As soon as you see it, you're like, you can't unsee it. But it takes you a minute to get there. So you've done that for a while, but now, you know, you designed, you're a great web designer. If I'm going to puff you up a little more, wayward.media is a website you designed. I know you're doing that, working with Anthony Trav as well, Trav Media Group, and getting into cryptocurrency and blockchain. What has it been like for you as you are transitioning to new phases of your life to be someone who has worked a service industry job? Because I think this is a weird thing. Someone I know is going through who's worked a task-oriented job and just got a brand new exciting job that is an office creative job where now you like sit in a chair and they're like, think about stuff and give me stuff versus show up every day and do this at 10 and this at 11. You have worked for a good portion of your career in a fun industry, right? In the an ancillary to the legalized cannabis industry, the legalized tobacco industry, whatever you want to call it, doing those things. But you're kind of transitioning to creative and working with clients and managing your own time. Is it exciting? Are you nervous? What's it been like from you've had to for a while be at a place for a time? We just talked about you had to do that for a decade. Show up at a place at a time, close the door at a certain time, routine money, stock shelves. Yeah, it's a smoke shop and it's fun and you're meeting artists. But at the end of the day, you show up, you open the doors, you turn on the lights, you talk to customers, you close the doors, you deposit cash, you rinse and repeat, right? What has that been like? Are you excited about this transition? Are you nervous as you move from, you know, retail, not retail, but that's, you know, task customer oriented to a different creative, do it on your own time kind of thing?
You know what? It's the passion never changes in the sense of what I'm doing, meaning that like, sometimes, yes, I've learned through starting enough businesses and enough projects and stuff like that, that I'm going to be wearing a lot of different hats regardless of what the outside industry or business I'm working within does, you know? So whether you run a retail shop or whether you're running a large scale social network or whether you're doing anything like that, like you tend, as long as if you're working for yourself, you tend to have to wear five or six different hats. And so what I really have found about myself is I don't want to work alone, meaning I always want some type of career that is associated with others and that I have access to others. People have proven to be my access to my antenna, and it allows my intuition to shine, and having that conversation back and forth and seeing the trends based on what people say and what where people are going emotionally at the time, it makes all the difference to what project and what I'm doing next. And so I thrive on having access to others. So no matter where I go forward, there will be some type of feedback loop that happens, or feedback in general that happens for me from others. I thrive on it. I need it as much as I need to breathe in the morning. And it's very, very powerful to take that feedback and know that you are capable of building this next larger entity or next larger thing. And seeing the effect and change that I can have on people when I have access to my antenna.
Yeah, I've enjoyed working in the creative space, and I have done some things solo, but I have found, and I always enjoy, like I enjoyed working in an office. It wasn't that I disliked going to an office. I did dislike sometimes some of the arbitrary natures of things and arbitrary break times and lunch times. And you get 2 10-minute breaks a day with a 45 minute lunch, and it becomes, and then if you're 2 minutes late, like that to me is frustrating, but I also understand and appreciate the need for that kind of uniformity to get staffs to function. And I feel like we actually are losing some of that sometimes. I get why managers ask these things of employees and do these things and ask them not to share pay, because it just, it's complicated, right? It's complicated on the other side. I had a great point until I went down that way, going through there. I don't know. Being a manager is hard. I totally forgot what I was going to say. I had a whole huge point and I got sidetracked. That's what happens. But so you're excited then? You're excited to get down into that world and to try your hand at putting yourself out there?
Everything I've ever built has always been bigger than the one before it. And so if I thought that founding Inhalables and having 50, 60,000 people come through that door every year that I get to just participate in the world around me with, if I thought that was big, what's coming next is I feel like what's around my corner is, if I got to change the lives of 50,000 people with my last project every year, the next thing I'm building right now has the potential to change millions. And I love that idea. It got really hard being at the store because you would know that you would have to have the same conversation many, many, many times. Mm. Meaning that, you know, what I like about some of the new stuff that's being done is I get to have these conversations one-on-one with you, but then it gets to be put off into the ether and those conversations get to resonate with certain people at certain times, far and away more. Hundreds of thousands of people have access to it now, just that one conversation. And for me, in order for me to affect change in millions and millions of people, I want to have that change happen a little bit more efficiently. And I need it to happen more than just a one-on-one conversation. And that's kind of where the build out's been going for the last 8 months to a year, or even the last 6 years with Inhalables. Those were some of the problems that we were trying to solve. And I'm just excited that a lot of the answers I've been seeking for the last 10 years have really, really started coming more and more frequently the last 16 months. And it's an exciting path. It really, truly is.
Oh, that's super awesome. It's so hard to not feel positive. It's so hard to not feel positive when you're like, what I did was great, but what I'm gonna do is unbelievable better. Like, it's hard to not get excited. It's hard to not fall into it. I do know what I was gonna say earlier. I love, as much as I liked working as a solo and being creative, I have found that I need that. I love what you call it, the feedback loop. I need someone else in my ear to just bounce stuff off of, or pick you back up when you're down, or just converse about something that's like-minded, right? That's something that you miss as a creative freelancer, which is why I look forward to being on set and seeing some people that I know, or having a conversation like this with someone I know, but in a different, slightly format, a more official format, so to speak. Because you just get to learn new things. You get to talk to them about stuff. You get to just have fun little conversations that aren't work-related, but in a work-like setting. And so you miss some of that as someone who just sits at home staring at a screen typing. I can't do that all day. I've been trying to find the perfect thing that allows me to entertain, to put myself out there, to public speak, to do things I'm comfortable with, to talk to people, which I like doing and having fun conversations. I enjoy that part. I can't just stare at the screen all day. I think that's hard. I wanted to say, though, I know what you mean about working in retail being a good conversation, but a very repetitive one. It's not that you have to say the same things. It's there's always a brand new customer, and you're always have to explain every day what the store is, where it comes from, what the sales are, even at a fast food place, right? Everyone, there's always someone's first time at McDonald's. There will always be, because there's always new people. So you're always going to have to explain what's on the menu, or what this is, or how's it work, or how's a drive-thru work, or how does debit? It's always somebody's first time. So it'll always be that way. You work at Best Buy, someone's always coming in looking for an electronic thing. So you're always like, where's the restroom? That way. Like, you just, it's going to get asked of you 15 times a day. And so while you can have lasting relationships on a customer level, you can have long-term customers who you get to know and you find out little tidbits, they're still always going to have the same questions. Do you have this in stock? Yes. Like, that's the, you know, it's always, it's fun, but it's, you know, repetitive is where this is. You have conversations, things happen. You may have to have the same conversation to spurn it, but it is so much you talk, you make, you push out into the ether, and then you talk and make more, right? It's not the same thing. We're not going to continually have like what we did today, setting up all this stuff. We may tweak it or adjust it, but that conversation about how do you do this, never gonna have that again. We know how to do it. We learned it. And then going forward, what else we do with video or editing, we'll have different conversations. How do we market this podcast? How do we get new sponsors to Wayward Media? Hey, if you want to sponsor the show, check us out, wayward.media. Big things coming. You heard it from Dustin Kava himself. Always better around the corner, above 50,000 people. That's what I heard in the first month. Then you get to do new things, right? So that's fun. I think that's awesome to be able to do something, create something, and then do it again. So I can see why you'd want, after a decade, to have a new kind of professional conversation.
Yeah, no, and I'm loving it. I mean, again, you can really get down that you're not doing the same things that you once were. You could have really gotten upset with yourself and said, whoa, they fired me at that job. And now I'm going to be depressed for the rest of my life.
I mean, you're depressed for a bit. You're depressed for a while. It takes a while to get over that shit, but
did it take something greater coming to get over it, or were you over it and then something great came? And I tend to find that I don't want to be in the position where I have to wait for good things to come to me in order to feel better about them. I want the ability to get over it quicker, and I want the ability to move forward. And to me, that seems like a much more long-term value set than just getting the new job or having the new opportunity present itself. I think the way we think is sometimes our biggest barrier than the things we do.
All right. Well, so tell me then what you're trying to do here. Tell me about cryptocurrency. Tell me what you're trying to do. Tell me what Boro is, because I really don't know if I know we've talked. I feel like you've explained it before, but I'm terrible at retaining information. So besides creating awesome websites, which clearly, if you're looking for something to do, check us out, wayward.media. Check out Trav Media Group on social media. We can get you taken care of through there, create awesome packages of promotion for your company. But cryptocurrency. Tell me why that, like, because I get your creative mind. I get that you have a great web design. You did great graphics, is set up this overlay as we're talking, right? Go into it. That part makes sense to your brain. Why try to get involved in logistical supply and blockchain and cryptocurrency? Like, why that when you have this creative side to you as well that you could probably tap into and probably do? You could probably do pretty well making content, making websites. Why delve into what the kids are doing?
I mean, what's the timeline of my past is the reason I've always been on the forefront of every new technology, you know, like when Google Glass came out, I was one of the 10,000 who got their Google Glass to experiment.
Hold on a second. I've never talked to anyone who owned a Google Glass before.
Oh my gosh. I'll send you a picture of me holding Oliver when he was like 2 months old with me having the Google Glass on. And
when you wore it, did you feel cool or did you feel like a douchebag?
I felt like an asshole, especially because, I mean, again, the biggest barrier to this was having the camera on the front, and that was everybody's fear. If Google Glass came out and it didn't have that camera and the privacy wasn't an issue, then there would have been no problem. I could have worn that and I would not have been the douche. There truly was the way people felt about their privacy that made you be the douche. It would be like you walking around with your camera up in everybody's face, you know, telling everybody, hey, how's it going? I got this camera.
You know, it's funny. There are people that do that, and there are douches, though. People that do that on for internet points, so to speak, like those assholes. Are the cringy, terrible TikToks.
Yes. And so, you know, there was positive things with the technology that I was able to have a window or glimpse into. And 10 years later, there's now finally putting that technology to useful situations. And so it's been dialed in. It normally takes 10 years to have an idea to shelf and, you know, like, and to have it polished enough that people would actually want to use it. So this crypto is no different. The internet was no different. You know, the car was no different. The electricity was no different. Phone was no different. The Pony Express was no different. You know, like they all
people are like, fuck this horse stuff. I just like to walk my mail.
Yeah.
Why does mail need to get there so fast? Exactly. What's wrong with taking 30 days to get the mail? Like who needs a week? Asshole, slow down. Life's moving too fast. You know, look, if there are people today, you know, there are people who are pissed that they all of a sudden, like for some irrational thing, like, I don't need it. It's a month. It's fine. You know, someone got mad.
No, I'm going to send it on the Queen Mary, you know, mail ship as opposed to in an airplane across the sea. Yes. And there's always going to be that. It's every technology has that. Even the wheel had it. You know, you know that some guy was carrying shit in a sack and another dude had the wheel and it took 6 months of watching that guy get to his house at night quicker for the guy with the sack to be like, fuck this. I'm making a wheel.
You know, he was so mad, though. He's probably like, look at that fucking asshole with his wheel. And he's all like, I'm getting this so much faster than you, and I can carry less weight. And you're like, I am, you know, they're justifying to like, I'm getting my steps in. Like I'm feeling good. Yes. Like there's, oh, you I know, I totally agree with you. Yes. Someone was just throwing shade at that wheel dude. Then they're like, all right, you know what? That's a good idea.
And I love that process because it's been my job as a human being to be the guy with the wheel and to constantly be pushing forward and getting others around me to build the cart. And there's something powerful of being that type of tool with others. And I love my job. I love that that is what I've always done forever. It doesn't matter how I built it, what I've built, or who I built it for. It has always been showcasing what is new, what is around, and better ways to get more time out of yourself. And I love that. Time is our greatest value set right now. These children are recognizing it. My parents recognize it right now when they're retired and they're, you know, like it matters to me. And I really do love the freedom that what technology actually, as much as it can enchain you, it really has the freedom and the option to provide way more freedom than you could ever want. And that's what I want for my kids. That's what I want for my clients. That's what I want for you. That's what I want for myself, you know?
It is going to be different. There is more and more pushes. I see an article about a 4-day work week almost every day, it seems, from someplace. They're experimenting with it. You know, obviously COVID coronavirus has, we talked about it before, expedited the work from home, right? Zoom and these other telecommunication type softwares, right? I mean, literally growing up, the idea of talking to someone on a phone and seeing their picture was sci-fi, science fiction. When I was a kid, the concept of it, even when we had computers, and we had our baud modems that we would hook up and go, psh, 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 right, and do the thing. I would play video games, like of the sorts, text-based video games on a BBS to where you would type in something, say it's a role-playing yeah. game. Like my bard, I don't know why I picked a bard. My bard sings his song to enchant the dragon. And I'd have to wait till like days until someone logged in to say whether or not the dragon fell asleep. And you know, it'd take a long time to do one battle, months even. Even then, which having communication with strangers was cool, the idea of a video phone seemed unimaginable. And now it's everyday, you know, everyday nature. So it is interesting. And I do think it is going to be more people. Times like when you said that, that's what kind of spurred that thought, because it does feel different, right? Time does feel different. Like, why do I want to spend? And I feel like I see this social media blast every day, all my life working, you know, days and hours spending at work to try and see my family for no time at all, right? Like, why are we doing that when there's a ton of other ways to make money? Now, you got to make the money, and that's what's tough. That's where we're at right now, where I'm at right now with this thing, trying to figure out a way to make it profitable, not even profitable, livable, right? Without doing all these other things and such. So, but I think there's going to be a change. I think it's going to be interesting 30, 40 years from now, 50 years, yeah. right? When like our kids, do you think they're pretty much all virtual? Do we still have task jobs, but I would think by the time our kids have kids, right? So, and I have 12-year-olds and you got a few years younger than that, but let's say 60 years from now, I would think most day-to-day tasks, fast food, like whatever version of fast food we exist, whether we're like Wall-E and we're just in chairs with milkshakes being shoved down our throat. I'm not sure. That feels like that's getting closer and closer to reality. I think that's all going to be done by robots, like AI, robot software. Like I see we're getting close now to where if we can find a way to cook it, right? It can be ordered and delivered via robot in some cities with those robot things. And now you just got to find a way to cook it. And once you can do all that, Jetsons like make food out of nowhere, there's no need for the human involved. So we talked about technology and the rate we're going. So in 60 years from now, I'm not going to be shocked if every bit of menial task is robots. The problem is at some point, you know, you have to like, you can't just create, you have to have someone to consume. Not everyone can be a creator. Does that excite you? Does it excite you about that? You're going to miss people swinging hammers to make railroads? I mean, is that something you want your kids to do, to learn tough? Or do you want them to embrace it and adapt it and just, you know, be the one who rules Skynet, not the one who fears Skynet?
grit doesn't happen because you chose a certain job.
Oh, you know, I like
grit
that.
Is
yeah,
a trainable
true.
Thing. It's something that you have to work towards. And so the truth is no, I'm looking forward to the automation of the future because I want my children to do things that make them, that bring them joy for work and that they can truly be good at, and supposed to just doing the most menial things. I think when you offer, I think that there will always be need for human services. And I say that because I do believe that when someone does a job that they actually love, as opposed to, you know, or something that interests them or that they're good at or anything along those lines, you tend to get more out of the person. And so when less of these jobs are around due to automation, I think it's going to make these children gravitate more towards that, to what are they good at? What is the passion? What's the current hobby? Even if that means they change their job every 6 years because their hobby changed, it might at least still mean that the teacher who's teaching for those 6 years absolutely does a phenomenal job, because it's no more about the money anymore. It's purely for the love of teaching that they chose that job. The same thing with anybody, a car repairman, a web designer, if he likes and is good at it, you know, it's going to be beneficial to others around them. And I think there is people that enjoy every single type of industry in some capacity to bring upon that better customer service, to bring upon that better service. And if the United States is a service industry as opposed to a manufacturing industry, right, you know, country right now, then I would say, you know, then yes, customer service is only going to get better. And I'm excited for those more and more automation to allow for customer service to get better, more time with a person doing less things though.
Yeah. No part of you, and especially given kind of your, you talk all smart and educated here, but your hippie-ish other side, is there no part of you that just doesn't want to shut it all down and go off the grid and never deal with anything? I mean, I know we talked about your people, don't you just want to get away and live in the woods for a while, forever? Is there a part of you that just wants that?
Nothing I do is not an extreme. So there is no middle ground with
me. So you'd be like, not just going in the cabin. You're going to the top of the mountains, total hermit, not talking to anyone. Exactly. Decades of silence, taking a vow.
Exactly. Blast me off to space. I'll be out there by myself. You know, yes, I have to do the extremes. But I think part of my job on this earth is to shout loud enough that the walls can get knocked down, to start the riot, to instill everybody and get them excited and get that momentum moving and let everybody crash the walls down. And then my job again after that is to walk in and say, do you guys want to build this new thing? I think it's going to be better than that wall. Like, we'll build a door there. We'll build a gate. And there's something beautiful about looking in the debris behind you after you've just fucking burned everything down and saying, no. But and turning around to my forward motion and be like, wow, look at, there's that brand new house there. We all got beds now, brother. You know, like, we ain't sleeping out under the stars no more. And I love
It's awesome though. Like, I just, it does feel inspiring when you talk about it. Like, it does. I like to ask this of people, and I don't know if we've had this conversation before, so tell me if we have. Are you down with going to space? You know, William Shatner just flew up to space, said it was awesome. We got these manned space flights. Let me ask you this first. You got some $250,000 discretionary income. You don't know what to do with it. You're bored. Are you buying a ticket, especially a first generation rocket ticket, to take what is essentially a really tall roller coaster?
Yes.
Are you?
Short answer, yes. And because it's not a fear thing, even though I'm scared of certain regards, heights and certain things. Like, I still want to skydive. I want to confront some of those concerns. But I also know that for my entire life, I have gravitated more towards being too up and as opposed to being grounded. And there's something in me that says, of course I would gravitate towards the rocket ship in space instead of gravitating towards walking in nature for 30 minutes. You know, like, there is something about me that is constantly up in the sky. And I think that's part of my journey, is learning to be a little bit more grounded. So no, it's a window into exactly who the hell I am, and exactly that I'm still on the journey to be more
interesting, because I am, yeah, you know,
up in space.
20 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, working before laid off me is definitely like, fuck yeah, let's go to space. I am 1,000% take 30 minutes in the woods right now. Like, quiet in the woods, give me my disc golf bag. That's all I need. Like, I don't even want that. Just quiet time in the woods, all in. I'm surprised to hear you say that, even though, you know, it's kind of very first generation. That's my fear. Like, I won't even, I'm wearing my little Xbox shirt today. I try not to even buy video game consoles first generation, because I know there's improvements to be made and such. So to be, and obviously we haven't had any issues yet. We've taken, I think, you know, between Blue Origin and SpaceX, whatever, what's Branson's called? I can't remember. Virgin, not Virgin Air, Virgin Rockets, I don't know what it calls. And then the Russians are starting to do it now too. You know, they haven't had any incidents yet, right? They probably will at some point. We've had accidents and disasters and NASA flights. We're going to have an accident and disaster in a private space flight. Obviously, I hope it doesn't happen. But I don't know. First generation makes me nervous. I want like 10 good years. But they've been flying planes for a long time, and I still don't like getting in planes. So I think it's me. I think it's a heights thing. I think it's a grounded thing. It's a fear of being out of control thing. And so the thought of floating, like, people want to fly as their superpower. That sounds awful. Like, I feel like I'm so far off the ground. I don't want to float. I don't like to float in the water, let alone in air. That scares me to death. You're up there. You're going to be the guy doing like 360 somersaults, looking at space, taking selfies of Earth in the back thing. Are you signing up, let's say, same offer, but now it's a trip to Mars? Probably no coming back. Let's take away, now there's child, there's family things. So I understand that. So we got to kind of take that a bit out of the equation. But would you go to Mars? Would you live in it, explore the brave beyond, like a Star Trek mission, if given the opportunity and safety and all that?
No, I think I'm meant much more to help the people down here on Earth. I think I would be doing a disservice to humanity to be one of the first ones to be building out that colony in Mars. I think, I think I'm in a position where being able to choose who I think would best represent us up there, I think I'm getting older and getting more solid in my foundation on what I would like to see for a better, if society was to be rebuilt, how would I have liked it to at least be thought about? Or, you know, I want to help way more people. There's enough people down here that really, truly are hurting. And it doesn't have to be this hard here. It really doesn't.
That is interesting. All right, so let's do this. Let's play a game. What's our ideal setup in of people to man like the first Mars thing, right? You would think you'd want older people, but then they're kind of stuck in their ways. So you need some younger people. Obviously, you need a cross-section of genders, orientation, races. So, but you can't send everyone. So you'd have to pick, you know, I guess one of a bunch of different races, you know, obviously several different genders or maybe some different orientations in there, some sexual orientation. You want to have it well represented. So I'm more thinking like age-wise, I guess. Age-wise, I'd always pictured I want someone older, but they're going to be set in their ways and they're going to fear a new society. Let's say you find a random new society, you know, they're going to attack it. I feel like they would just attack it and throw it over. I think choosing the people to represent us on that mission, that's a bold task, because how do you say, even if it's you get everyone, you get the best cross-section possible, how are you the best representation of that particular group? I do not want to be the representation of middle-aged white men. I feel like that's not a responsibility in any way, shape, or form. Like, that sounds terrible.
And I think anybody chosen really is specialized. And I'm a guy who wears a lot of hats. I'm not specialized in any one thing.
You would have to have a Neeson-like skill, like one very good skill. Like, this person is amazing at this, right? Fluent in languages, right? That's really right. They are so almost on the spectrum of sorts, because they're so focused in on that particular task. So you know, you're right. You wouldn't want almost, you probably need one person who's a multi-hat wearer, but you can't have a bunch of those.
Well, and then my question is how do you just have one blacksmith, you know, if he has a heart attack up in space or, you know, like, so now are we doubling the type of skill set that we have for everybody? You're right. And then my question then is if one person is specialized and dialed in, usually the second person that's specialized in it has a completely different thought process. They are the top tier guys in their field because they possibly think different than each other. And that's why there's room for the both of them there. And so my question then goes in is how do you establish, you know, like the foundation on which direction you're actually going when you have two separate people pointing in two separate directions up there? And, you know, again, it's so much more complicated than what I ever, you know, than what you think, but it's like, yeah, how do you have redundancy, but yet no friction with the leader? There is a leader in each one of the redundant processes that gets the norm first or something.
Yeah, because then you have jealousy. If you have two scientists, they're all going to think, well, I want to be the one to make the discovery. So you almost need two different ships that don't know about each other just in case. You basically need two, like, yeah, identical ships or three, so they don't know each other and these things, and it's part of probably one of the reasons it's going to be tough to get there. Not just the cost of doing it, is how do you choose representation? Because what's going to happen is, let's be real, it's going to be money. And that's what's going to start it. Look at who's going to space first on this giant roller coaster. People with lots of money, or yep, friends of people with lots of money, or famous people like William Shatner, who still has a fair amount of money. Priceline commercials probably paid well. So... yeah, I don't know. I also would not want to be that. I have no desire to leave Earth. I feel like I have, you know, unless they discover the cure for living forever, which I really don't know if I want to do that either. I have a finite amount of time left, and I would like to spend it walking in nature for the most part. That's kind of or talking to people, one of those two things. That's interesting. I would have pictured you as not a spacer, not a go to space person, if I would have had to guess. But you're all in. You're all in. You're like, I'm going it there. What's the one thing you have to bring? Do you have a knickknack or any sort of thing that you'd have to take to space with you that you would clutch in your hand or tuck in your pocket like a pilot? Do you have a child's note or a toy that you'd bring with you, or a nostalgia based knickknack?
No. I probably would be one picture of the family, just like, sorry, I'm an idiot, when this thing is spinning around as it crashes to the earth, just like, I love you.
Yeah, it's so hard. Like, it's got to be so hard to be, I mean, not to just watch someone, you know, obviously perish, or your family members, but to think, like, even airline pilots, like the wives or the spouses, the partners of them, they're always taking off every day. I get scared to death taking off for one flight. And there are men and women and more that are flying every day. Like, right, they just literally 2-3 times a day, they take off, they land. You see the staff within the plane. I don't know, stewards or stewardess, whatever they call them these days, flight attendants. It gets shaky and rumbly, and they're just like, they just kind of move with it. They're like, yeah, they're just like holding the drinks and just balancing it based off inertia. Like, and I am like white knuckling. I'm not even Catholic, and I'm crossing myself, and I'm praying, and I'm literally like doing anything I can to survive. And they're just tilting their tray to offset gravity. So, I mean, I guess you get used to it, but it's not for me. I don't like to fly. I don't even like to drive anymore. I've gotten to the point in my life where I don't even enjoy being in a car. I don't know. Is that weird? My wife thinks that's really weird. I don't.
No way. I think you're at the exact spot you should be at your age. And then I think when you're 65 and everyone's telling you, you did a good job with the first 60, you can do whatever the hell you want now, you know, like, then you're going to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm getting in the car. I'm going Newport.
I don't know. I always pictured getting a very fast sports car, right? That was always one of my things. I was going to get a Corvette. That's always been one of my favorite sports cars. And now I feel like I would like a nice, expensive, practical car. Like, give me more of a Mercedes or maybe even a Tesla. Like, I want a cool, fancy, expensive car. I mean, I don't want, you know, if I had my dream car, but also I feel like it would have to be practical. Like, I want it to have four doors, because two doors is annoying. Like, I just don't have, they're so heavy. Like, how do you get in and out of the back seat? Like, these are problems I think about. Like, oh, and then, you know, SUVs are too tall and big. I don't like driving big car. But I also don't like riding in the back seat. I need to have a permanent chauffeur who then I get to ride shotgun all the time. But they got to be a good driver. Like, I get even annoyed with my wife and her driving. It's just because she drives like probably like a normal adult. I get told I drive like a grandma. I don't know. I don't mind it though. I just have gotten to the point in my life where, but I'm also never going to teleport. I'm never going to be signed up to take one of those Star Trek things that splices DNA and tries to reassemble, because I'm not coming back in one piece. So not happening either. I don't know how the hell to travel. I literally, Dustin, this is an issue. I know that you and Anthony are heading to Vegas soon. Safe travels, by the way. Out there representing Trav Media Group. You going to MJ BizCon? Is that where you're going?
Correct. Yeah, MJ BizCon.
Okay, BizCon. Let's talk about cannabis trade shows after this. So you're getting ready to travel. Is the flight anywhere in your mind? Like, are you nervous at all? Do you think about, I mean, you got to pack and stuff, but are you like, okay, here we go. Like, I'd be breathing and talking and probably sweating bullets just thinking about flying 5 days from now or whenever you're taking off.
Yeah, man. No, I am. Part of me is this ability, you know, like, I've always had the issue where the journey, all I've wanted was the journey, and I've always hated the destination. So I would fucking vacation down in Miami, and the drive to Miami is actually the joy for me. And then I get to Miami and I'm at the beach in the hotel overlooking everything, smoking a joint. And next thing I know, I want to go home. I want the drive back again. I want to get out of wherever I'm at. And so there's something innate in me that always wants to keep moving forward. Stopping to smell the roses has always been a hard thing for me. It's why I talk about it so much to others. It's because I don't want them to have that same friction. You really should be able to enjoy the now. And yeah, no, I don't know where the hell I was going with that, but yeah, there's something to that. And so I love the plane ride. I love the plane ride. I like being uncomfortable, squished together. You know, I like that. It's the walking. It's the 3 weeks before that I get really, really nervous. And then it's the standing in line at the check-in, you know, and it's everything about that. And then the second I am past everything and I'm sitting down waiting to actually get on the plane, I am 100% comfortable from that point on. And so I'm not sure what's happening, but I know when I get to Vegas, I'm back to being uncomfortable. I'm not in my element anymore. I'm now talking to new people and going to new cities and driving on new roads and in a new car. And there is something to me that I am going to be leaning on Anthony to be like, yo, bro, I want you to take leadership on this one, because I'm done. I can't take any more stress. And again, in this case, a lot of this is Anthony's lead, just because, you know, it is Anthony's company. If I was in control of it, holy shit, I would be on top of his ass the whole time out there. Listen, man, we're going to be up at 7. We're going to this. I got this shit to do. You know, it's a totally different play. And so I kind of like entering into this space this week or next week, not being the one in control. It's kind of a neat process. It's the first time going to Vegas where it wasn't me dictating every single thing about it.
Yeah, I'm the opposite, exact opposite of you. I don't like the journey. I like the preparation. That's probably my favorite part. I like the preparation. I get really into preparing and planning and thinking about it. The journey's okay. I like the destination because I can just make it work, right? I've planned, I've prepared, I've thought about it. That's why I like running events and things. I dread the ride home to and from, my least favorite parts. So you're going to MJ BizCon, a cannabis-centric business trade show.
Yeah, the largest cannabis convention in the world, actually.
So what's it like there? I mean, is it? I know, I've been to them, but I want to hear you say, like, you know, I've been to, and also more of a smoking centric one, like a Hash Bash or a Cannabis Cup. This is more of a businessy B2B, I guess, than B2C kind of trade show. So it is, without, you know, the fact that everything's about cannabis related, but it probably is just like your boring trade show, I would imagine, right? Just big tents and people talking and t-shirts and pens being handed out and lanyards and, yep, you know,
and search. And the truth is, it's an ocean. Bars. It's an ocean. Yeah. And that actually makes me think of the next point is, to me, it's the great trash ring in the ocean right now. You know, like, there are tons of fucking nonsense floating around in that ocean, but you might float into the middle of it and find an old fucking Nintendo cartridge that's worth $300,000 that was thrown away 30 years ago. There are treasures in the trash heap. And it just so happens that being the largest convention, there's going to be a lot of trash. But I love when you see the ones that stand out, or you see the concepts that stand out with the, they really, really stand out. And when you hear the speakers talk, and when you when something out of 10 speakers resonates with you, it is something that transforms the way you do business from there on in. And I love the, I see MJ BizCon as almost like a think tank as opposed to a convention. You know, yes, there are their stands and booths, and like, yes, here's our extraction products. This is what we make for packaging and stuff like that. But when you find the gold, it really is gold. It is. And it's it's profound sometimes. And then I tend to get more work done at the conventions after the convention. So, you know, I never enter into a space where I try not to have at least 3 or 4 meetings while I'm out there, aside from the convention. And usually when you get another person who is in a foreign space, like Vegas, like, you know, they're from Montana or some shit, and they're out in Vegas right now, and you get to, you know, you're having dinner and stuff, you get a different side of them than what you got at the convention. And and that can be really, really powerful. And powerful for myself to open up and be a different person for them after the show. The show is very welcome with your arms up. You're always trying to present a status amongst the others. And I think it's such bullshit. I go in there looking homeless, but I guarantee by the time I'm talking to people, they're like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, is he under the bridge, or is he living in some mansion somewhere? Like, who the this guy's something. I'm not quite sure.
I would say you have that effect on people. To go in to look at, you know, consumable devices and in Hable's smoke shop there and inhalables, and just striking up a random conversation, one of those many conversations that you probably have had tons of times. Some resonate. Probably very few people do you talk to 5 years later in this setting, but you've had that same welcome to inhalables, let me tell you about the store, and then just be you, right? Being you. But it was clear, I'm not sure exactly what this guy's got going on, but there's something, right? Have you been to Vegas before? Have you been there a few times?
Oh, plenty of times. I think my life, this is probably 7, maybe.
Give me a favorite, least favorite things about going there and going to a trade show. So kind of wrap that into one. Favorite things about Vegas trade show life and least favorite things about Vegas. Because there's trade shows in Minneapolis that are very different, because you go to the hotel, you go to your thing, you go back up to the room, maybe you go to a hotel bar. Vegas is its own animal because you have so much more, I mean, besides just the convention. So that you don't have in Minneapolis or Georgia or any of those places. Here in Cleveland, we have trade shows, but they're not like Vegas. So least favorite, most favorite part about trade show life in Vegas.
I love the fakeness of it all.
I love it.
I something about seeing a fake fucking Statue of Liberty, and something about seeing this fucking pyramid that it's a hotel that looks like a pyramid, you know, like
the Eiffel Tower, right?
Shit,
man, isn't the Eiffel Tower there in Paris or whatever?
Yes, like, exactly, man. Like, dude, that shit, even though I know it's that tchotchke fucking, it is nonsense across the fucking board. And to spend the amount of money that you spend to go there and see that bullshit, it makes no sense to me why I love it so much. But I'll be damned, dude, I'm going to Treasure Island to walk around and look at all the fake treasure shit in the hotel. And I'm going, you know, like, I love that shit. And I like that it's so obvious sometimes that it is this other play thing that, you know, I like it. I love that. And then the things I really don't like are.
You're such a positive person. I know it's hard for you to put something on blast. You don't put a lot of people really on blast there. Dustin Kava does not believe in blasting.
Sometimes it's the expense. I remember going there when I was young and you had access to the $2 buffets and stuff like that. You know, it's that shift from gambling is not the center focus of Vegas anymore, and now the entertainment is the center focus. Mm-hmm. It has shifted the cost of it. And so now I don't always feel like the value set is there to experience it as a vacation. I like the idea of turning it into more of like a work place, and it's a great place to blow off steam when you've been fucking hating your boss for 9 months and then he sends you out to Vegas. It's like, thanks, yes, dude.
No, it, like, does, yes, a lot of people is not a good trade show or good. I always when I did work conferences multiple times a year, I felt like it was not a good experience unless someone came back and got fired, right? Because someone always drank too much. Someone always had sex with someone they shouldn't have. Like, there was always, that was, it happened every year. Every year at these trade shows we go to, and I've been to Vegas. I used to go to this one place I worked to, this like Niagara on the Falls, because they were a Canadian company. So we did it at Niagara Falls for 3 years, these conventions. And there was always some shenanigans, some tomfoolery, some adultery. You name your adverb. There was always something going on there. That inevitably someone would get fired post trade show, right? They're just like a good Christmas party. Not a good Christmas party unless someone just gets hammered, makes an ass of themselves, and then gets fired the next day. Are you a gambler? Are you someone that likes that? Do you play? You gamble at tables, slots? What's your
no,
poison there?
I save the money for crypto.
I gamble my money. That makes sense.
But so, I will say
nothing at all. Not even like some video poker or something like that.
Never. Very rare. Actually, if I'm with my mom, we'll play the slot machines just because she loves it so much. And if I sit there for 8 hours with her, it is like the best day that she's had in like years, you know. That's so nice. If family's along with me, yeah, I'll play to hang. If I'm by myself, yeah, right, I'm going to the dispensary, grabbing a fat hog leg, and I'm going somewhere. I'll be walking.
I have not been there since they had I haven't been there since they had legal cannabis. That changes everything, right? Going to a place that has legal cannabis, particularly, like, we both live in Ohio, which has a medicinal program which you can have access to, assuredly.
And I get my medical discount out there from being a patient in Ohio. And,
oh, really? Buying, well, that's all they reciprocalness of.
You know, like, for me,
I was going to say, those dispensaries aren't like even anything else. I've seen the pictures of the dispensaries. They're very Vegas-like. So it's not even like I've been to some in Michigan or Colorado. Yes. It's not like that. It's not like, it's just like a store. It looks like a normal store, like, or even inhalable. It just looks like a store.
Well, and the plane ride used to hurt me, you know, like, I used to not be able to travel because by the time I'd get off the plane, my back would already go out. Mm. So now 80% of the places I travel accept my medical card. And that means that, like, I get off the plane, I'm hurting. I walk into this. I literally get out of the airport, get in my rental, and go straight to get my medicine. And there's something about finally being able to experience those places unhinged by pain, you know, that, like,
oh, absolutely.
I love it. And yeah, Vegas has that show, you know, the world's largest dispensary. But when you go there, it's like, yeah, maybe you're just a big open building, but it takes me 15 feet to walk to the next case and look at something, you know, like, you didn't actually fill it with more shit. You just had more space. So, like, and
you
that's
separated
Vegas in
the little shit you had.
Yes. And that's Vegas in a nutshell. It's like the world's biggest buffet. And it's like, yeah, it's not actually you had more shit on for plates. It's just that you have more tables, you know? And it's, I don't know. I love it. I love it for all of its ridiculousness.
I don't know. I haven't been in a bit. It's been a while since I've went. And the last couple of times I went, we had to, you know, I like to gamble. I always believe. I believe I'm going to win, which is how they do it, right? And so but I feel like there's a sense of confidence in that. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to win. I typically don't. I've always lost more money. I don't really gamble a lot. I try to be like that $100 guy who takes $100 and does that. I almost always walk out with zero. So I try not to anymore. I used to go more regularly, even to the ones in here, like when Ohio had some casinos and stuff, I'd go mostly a slot player sometimes, and mostly because to save money, right? Because you play tables, $20 can go very fast. I think I once lost $50 on war in about 30 seconds in Vegas. Like, I was like, all right, that's a bad call. I don't know. I feel like today, as you said, I'd be a little differently focused. It's been a while since I've had that. I really don't have the desire. I'm more focused on putting my money elsewhere. There's other things I can get or buy. You know, even this, like I said, the stock things, it's too much anxiety. Gambling is a very anxiety driven thing. Like, just, you feel, and then if you get down, you feel like you have to win. Even playing the lottery, I don't know, it's just too much work and effort to check and verify. So It's not my jam. Make it the old fashioned way. Talking, making content, Dustin. Twitch streaming, playing video games for people to watch. That's how we did it back in my day. We didn't gamble much.
Yeah, I can't wait till that's what I'm saying to the kids.
Yeah, there's no to be. What do you think they're going to say, right? Like, because we had our, you know, growing up, and I, not quite my era, but probably my parents' era, right? They walked to school back and forth, you know, uphill both ways. When we grew up, oh, we lost you there, your camera. When our parents are older, we're going to be like, I used to have to go to school, right? I used to have to actually show up in class. You kids got it easy today doing the school from your beds. It's going to be that kind of thing, I think, going forward. So I think that's what's going to happen. She told me we're moving. Like, she got me a little chat. We got to work on this setup. Like, so then I can be like, bam, one shot, right? Just so we know. Or just kick me into a one shot as I'm talking.
No, I don't even want to explain what technical happened there, but it was silly and it won't happen.
So what do you think they're going to say? Like, what is going to be the problem that we're going to, kids are going to complain about? It's definitely going to be going places. I feel we're going to be gonna much be more. At me.
This kid's going to be like, you were creating content in 2D. You know, like how hard was that? These kids are going to be, you know, like when they put on their new AR headsets in 30 years, like these kids are going to be grabbing DNA molecules. They're going to be doing the Mission Impossible things. They're going to be like, how the heck did you work on a flat plane here?
Fair enough.
And you know, like the design in 3D, the collaboration that some of this stuff is going to have for them. You just are no longer going to feel a distance. It already feels like there isn't a distance because of the internet and how quickly and easy it is for you to, you know, communicate with others. But truly having a feedback sense that when they touch you, you feel it. When they smell, when you walk through a space and your computer scents out the smell and, you know, there's sounds that are trickling in and stuff. The experience of others is going to be, it's going to be pretty powerful. And I just cannot wait for my kids to just laugh at me for how much I complain about making content in the flat space.
So you think flatness is a big thing? You think the virtual, like the using, you said, like AR technology to kind of Minority Report or Mission Impossible, like pull stuff like you see on like even CSI, like Vegas had there. You kind of pull stuff together. Oh, put this stuff over here. Bring that in. Well, what was Tony Stark, right? In the Avengers, he's just pulling stuff in. He's making it, tossing it literally to the 3D printer, and it just boom, it comes up. Those kind of things. You think that kind of movement is part of the wave going forward of technology, being able to access the world around you and compute like typing? I would think even I feel like it'd be more internal. Like we're going to work towards more. I don't even have to type. I just kind of think it. And I don't know why we'd have to type anymore. I feel like it's just going to be telepathy kind of shit.
Exactly. I think, you know, the only problem I do see is in 40 years, they're going to have less of an understanding on how their technology interacts with the way and the world around them, even though they have access to it more. So, you know, the algorithms are only going to get more and more complex, and the arrangements on why you got the output you got is going to be more and more muddled. And, you know, there is a fear with me that I want my kids to not only use this technology in a friction-free way, I want them to understand it. And I want that ability that, like, you know, to just grasp the basics on how it operates and why. We forget a lot of it. We get in the car and we drive it. I would like to see more of us understanding the things that we use, and even me for myself understanding it a little bit more. But again, freedom means the opposite. It's the ability to use an object and not really give a fuck about where it came from or how it works and just be able to use it, you know, too. There's so I don't know. Like, yes, I think the world's going to be going to that way in probably 40 or 50 years, but
I think it's faster than that. I feel like it's way faster. If we've come from 8 tracks to where we're at now in 40 years, like just imagine
mom was working on a 3D headsets, right? In 1994, you know what I mean? So she was at conventions in Vegas displaying the dumbed down version of the Oculus today, and it has taken 25 years to get to where Oculus is on the household front. And so, you know, when now that it's in the household, it's still been 5 years that they've been pushing out this product and a $1 billion investment from Microsoft, and still are not in every household.
I don't think it's even close to every household.
Exactly. And so to me, you got about 10 or 15 years till it becomes in every household for a reason or another, an extra 10 or 15 years from this point. And then you got usage cases happening because of that. So I really, you know, I think it's going to start more with old people, more with us. The technology is going to be more advancements towards taking care of the old, as a, you know, new kids fucking jacking off to a new medium. But
that's a valid point. A lot of people right now, a lot of people our age are trying to make shit to make their end of life better. So I agree with you. I feel like because a lot of people that are creating stuff right now, and there's a lot of younger folks, 20, 25, 30, that are doing, but I think it's a lot of people our age, your mid 30s, like who I'm trying to figure out, I have so much time left here. I would like to make it better. I'd like to not work all the time, 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. wearing a suit and tie. I'd like to not, you know, for to bring it all the way back to where we started. I think there's a lot of people our age trying to do that. And then the younger people are like, well, this is just what it is. Like, there is no other expectation than what we're doing now. So they're automatically, and they're going to benefit from our end of life improvements. And then it just like anything else, secular in nature. So that's interesting. I think it, I don't know. I don't know what the future holds. I hope, you know, there's going to be some day that technology outgrows us. Right. I'd like to think my father, if he's listening, not right now, but he will at some point, is a very like technologically driven man. He was on the forefront of 300 baud modems, the beta camera, right? All these things. He had Laserdisc player. He was always into that. And now technology is a little like much. I find myself, some of it's a little like you said, the Oculus Rift. I'm not down with it. I get no desire to see 3D, no desire to see virtual reality. I'm good with my own reality. Like, I'm good with 2D playing video games, so to speak. I guess it's a 3D view, but you know what I mean? I'm good with that interaction of my Xbox and my controller and that. My brother, who's 10 years younger almost, totally into the 3D. And I could see in the VR and stuff, and I could see, you know, you're kind of that age. So I don't know. I think some point, do you think we just go all in though? Do you think we just fall into the VR world like a Ready Player One scenario? Do you think we just go all in, or is there going to be, you know, realies and virtualies kind of thing where people separate of who lives in the fake world and who actually lives in the real world?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know if that happens.
I think that, again, it's more like a pendulum. The pendulum of technology swings in certain directions. And it's like, wherever there's the one extreme of over adoption, there's going to be the other extreme on the swing of, you know, the shunning of it. So I think that there's always going to be a place for nature. There's always going to be a place to the physical touch in the physical realm. But I think that our biggest forms of things we need to do for this world is to bring a lot of these other countries and people and stuff into that realm, give them access to what that provides them. We've yet to see the technology help every single person on this planet. And I'm interested to see what it's going to take to do that. And, you know, and I get excited over what those opportunities are. I want solar powered Oculus headsets to teach children in Africa. Like, yes, I want to throw my charts, my trading charts for crypto in 3D all around my room so I can start watching them in 3D, you know, like, yeah,
you can live in like a virtual vault, like Scrooge McDuck, but a virtual crypto vault. I just want people to find the podcast, Wayward Planet. Find out Wayward Media. I want people to appreciate Wayward Media for where we have coming down the road. This is a good kickoff episode, a good kickoff for Wayward Planet Live. Thank you for helping me get it all set up and going. I'm excited about what the future brings for this. You want to help people. I just want people to subscribe to the podcast on the channel. Like, follow us at MeetWM, MeetWM. Check out Trav Media Group. If you're online, visit Inhalables. Still, why not? Go check them out. Brunswick, Ohio, Inhalables_ on your social media, kids. I don't know, Dustin, you got a lot going, a lot of it positive. It always feels good to talk to you. We talked the other day on the Monthly Marketing Voyage, also available on Wayward Media. Also available as an audio podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. So check those out, Google Play, iTunes, etc. It's always good to talk to you because you get it's impossible, I think. Like, I'm sure people will talk to you. I take that back. I know someone, my wife, who would talk to you and probably roll her eyes like, I get it. You're so happy with life and you want to help people. I find it to be invigorating, right? I find it to be like, my wife is like that. I'm kidding. I find it to be like, yes, like, let's do this shit. I'm almost ready to get in a rocket. Like, I'm not quite there. I'd be like, you know, I'd be like next to you. Be like, good luck, man. Like that kind of thing. That's what I'm doing. I'm not really getting into rocking. That sounds crazy. But it's hard not to talk to you and be excited. And I'm excited about what we're going to do together. I'm excited about what I think you're going to be able to do with some of the other things you have going on. Because I believe you. Like, I just believe you're going to make it happen. And if it doesn't, you're going to say, well, then I'll make this happen, right? What's next? What's the other thing coming? Which is awesome, right? Because it is hard to fail. And then to try again, right? We're going all the way back to where we were 95 minutes ago. It's hard to fail and then start back up again. So I appreciate you being patient as we're getting this going and helping me get there. I'm excited to do this again. I'm fired up. I have a couple coming next week. We're going to do these all live. We don't have any viewers right now, but we're going to. At some point, there's going to be people watching live. There's going to be feedback coming. There's going to be people saying you suck more. I mean, that's all coming, whether it's good or bad. There's a weird connection that the video adds that audio doesn't. I realized that just in preparing for this, when you put it out on audio, I record it. Yeah, you do the editing and you kick it. I don't even think about it, right? I'm not really here. At some point, we could turn on live interaction. Here, people are watching live as we're talking. And it's weird, right? It's weird. It's fun though. It's fun. I like the software that we found. Give StreamYard a little shout out. I think it's going to work out well for us. So looking forward to it, man. You ready for the journey? Ready to kick Wayward Planet, Wayward Media to the stars, wayward.media, wherever you're.
I am so stoked, man. You have no idea. I'm just excited for what the future brings. It's about time that we get excited.
Again, you look great. The new camera setup's fantastic, by the way. You look amazing. You're a handsome yet disheveled fellow at the same time. You do give that. He could be homeless. He could be a crypto billionaire. Look about you. Like, it's a very fine line sometimes, and we're not sure. And as I said the other day on the monthly marketing voyage, I don't think I've ever seen him without a hat. Like, this no hat thing is really throwing me off. You're always, always wearing a hat for such. We didn't even get a chance to talk about disc golf. We'll have to do that again. We'll have to talk about disc golf. I was actually one of my openers. But as with any great show, I don't know, we just got sidetracked. We went other plays. We talked about space and the future and Vegas and weed and all those other fun things that you like to talk about. So, thanks for joining me. Thank you everyone for checking out Wayward Planet, wayward.media. That's where you're going to find this show. A lot of the great shows we have coming, not just from myself. We got Dustin, not just Dustin or Anthony, people you know who are associated with helping Wayward Media. We got some other great people coming soon. We'll talk about it more when it happens, but we got some other great people starting podcasts. That's what we're trying to do, right? Build a media network. If you're interested, shoot us an email, right? Hello@wayward.media. If you'd like to sponsor the show, clearly we could use a little cheddar. Hello@wayward.media or go to wayward.media. You'll find us. Follow us on social media at MeWM. Follow the podcast. Dustin, you want your social media out there? No one's going to hear it anyway. But you
can professional. The only thing I want to do is say thank you. Thank you for those who are sharing their most precious resource with us, and that's their time. I appreciate anyone who listens today.
I appreciate that we have an outro music here, so I'm going to cue it up and set it. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. As always, be awesome, be healthy, be safe. Do your thing. All right, we'll talk to y'all next time. Six, five, four, three, two.